Hi, I'm Sarah. And guess what? I'm an alcoholic. You know, and I am a very thankful and blessed alcoholic. And I'm thankful to be here tonight. And when I share my story, I really just ask God to speak through me. And I ask God to let somebody hear something, and I always hear something. So it is truly a blessing. So I like to start with the end and kind of then go backwards, because that way you can exhale, you can relax, you know I'm okay. I'm obviously standing up here, but I tell you, I am standing here tonight as the most content I've ever been in my entire life, and the most at peace I've ever been in my entire life. And everything in my life is absolutely perfect. And by perfect, it's exactly the way it's supposed to be. Now, by perfect, I don't mean that I won the lottery and I have the perfect job. I actually don't really have a job right now, but that's okay. I also have 90-year-old parents right now that their health, we were in the hospital with my dad 2 weeks ago, but that's okay. Relationships, there's not anybody right now that is angry at me, that doesn't want to speak with me. I have people call me all the time asking for help, asking for my name as a reference. I stand here tonight with my life being absolutely perfect for the first time in my entire life. And as the last year wrapped up, people were doing their New Year's resolutions. And I said, you know, 2017 was the best year of my entire life, and I truly believe 2018 will be that much better. And I say that because I'm finally living life on life's terms. And I was not that way 3 years ago. So I'm going to start my story now at the beginning. Here's the part where, if you watch any of those Lifetime original movies, okay, they go back to the beginning. I was born here in Austin, and I was the youngest of five kids. And I thought we were pretty normal. We used to sit around the table and have dinner. My parents didn't drink. And I never thought, so I want to also share some of the things that I thought were the reasons why I couldn't be an alcoholic. That was one. My parents didn't drink. My parents aren't alcoholics. Well, my parents don't drink. If they did drink, I have very, very sneaky suspicion that they would be alcoholics. My mom's 90 years old, and she's a hoarder. My dad is still working. He's 89 years old. So there's some kind of addiction, some kind of patterns there. But at the time, I didn't see it. Pretty normal childhood, as I said, except I was teased a lot. I mean, they call it bullying now. I called it teasing then. Never to the point of where I was suicidal. I always had a friend or two, but I really wasn't. I never felt like I really fit in. And I hear that a lot in the rooms, and I finally feel like, okay, I really do fit in, because other people felt like they didn't fit in either. I always wanted to be skinnier, cuter, have something more. But my life really changed when I was about to start high school. And youngest of five kids, and we're all close in age. My oldest sister had gone off to college, and my dad was appointed to a position, in a political position in D.C. So we moved. My family moved. And my one oldest sister was in college. The next oldest sister stayed here to finish high school. So I went from five kids around the table to three kids around the table. And pretty quickly after that, my brother that was 10 months older than me was diagnosed with cancer. Now, the reason I'm an alcoholic has nothing to do with my brother having cancer, or it has nothing to do with me being an alcoholic that he had cancer. So, but looking at the time when I started drinking, certainly was when he was sick. And he was sick for about a year and a half. Again, it's not why I'm an alcoholic. I truly believe I was born an alcoholic. Okay, number two reason why I thought that I wasn't an alcoholic. Growing up here in Austin, I really don't think I knew somebody that was an alcoholic. in my parents' circle of friends. If they were, they had hidden it from us. But I knew on Northland Drive, I knew behind those hedges, that's where the alcoholics went. And I had a fear of alcoholism. I had a fear so much so that I went to a liquor store one time with my mom when I was a little girl. I couldn't have been 6 years old. And I was afraid that they would think my mom was an alcoholic. So I followed her around the store. She was buying alcohol for a party that they were having, which was really unusual. They didn't drink, and they really didn't have parties. And I remembered saying really loudly, "Mom, you need to get help. You need somebody to help you because you know nothing about alcohol." I had such a fear of what alcoholism was. Now, where that came from, I have no idea. I don't think my family ever said that alcoholism was a bad thing. It somehow came to me that that was a bad thing. So my fear of what an alcoholic was. My avoidance of my brother's death, you know, in sobriety, I've had some pretty ups and pretty downs. And one of the worst downs, and it really wasn't even that bad, but something that hit me pretty hard, and it was really, really painful. And I remembered, like, the kind of painful, you know, where you're laying on the floor, just you're crying your eyes out, and your stomach hurts so bad because you're just crying so much. And in the middle of that, I sat up, and I was like, oh, my goodness, this is what it's like to feel. This is what it's like to feel. This is kind of cool. Oh, wait, it hurts, like, but this is what it's like to feel, because I had not felt, I don't think I had really felt in 30-some-odd years. So I really, you know, I looked at my friends. My friends were drinking more than me. So for me to think I had a problem, I thought I drank pretty normally in college. I thought I drank pretty normally in high school. After college, I really didn't drink that much. So there again, I thought, well, there were those years that I didn't drink. And granted, that's been 20 years ago, but there was a two-year period that I didn't drink. I was leading a discipleship group, and I did not want to be a hypocrite. So I thought, maybe I shouldn't drink. That might cause my brother to stumble. So I held on to that. Well, there was those 2 years that I didn't drink. And it really wasn't until about 10 years ago that there were some episodes in there a couple of times, but 10 years ago, about 11 years ago, I got a divorce, and so I was home. My business, the work that I do, there's a lot of drinking involved in it, so it was pretty normal. And again, there are my girlfriends. They're drinking more than I am. I used to walk my dog in my neighborhood when they had the half bin recycling bins, and all my neighbors drink tons more than me. Well, okay, there's two or three people in that home, and there's only one in my home, and I'm not taking mine out to the curb because I don't want people to see it. So there's a little bit of a problem there. But that's when my drinking really took off. And there was tons of alcohol in our house from my marriage that was never touched. People would bring bottles of things or beer and leave it in the refrigerator. It never was touched. So I didn't have a problem because I could leave that beer in the refrigerator, or I could leave that alcohol under the bar. I kept holding on to that idea that I wasn't an alcoholic because once upon a time, I could not touch it when it was there. But fast forward 10 years ago, started drinking more and more, started drinking during the day, started drinking. You know, I would stop for a few weeks at a time. A girlfriend would say, let's give it up. Let's give it up for health reasons and do a workout. And I could do it for a few weeks. And it really wasn't a problem. And I never had shakes. So, I didn't have withdrawal symptoms. So I wasn't an alcoholic. I also saw a marriage counselor during the time when I was getting a divorce. And she said I wasn't an alcoholic. I held on to that card for a long time. She was a doctor. She was a therapist. Granted, she was a marriage counselor. She had nothing to do with understanding alcohol and drugs. So, you know, during this time, I was feeling more and more irritable and discontent. And people have asked me if alcoholism or my alcoholism was the cause of my divorce. And I used to say, oh, absolutely not, because I really wasn't drinking then. But now I see it was the disease was starting to take off, that it was starting to, I was starting to feel more and more uncomfortable and didn't know how to deal with it, did not know how to communicate with my former husband. And alcohol did seem easier after the fact. So I do think that that definitely contributed to my divorce. I had a consequence of, you know, I was drinking a lot, but there was a time when I wasn't really drinking that I got pulled over by the cops. And I do have a DWI on my record from 11 years ago, and I still didn't think that that was, no, that was, it, because I wasn't drinking that time. I had been drinking earlier, but I really wasn't drunk, so that couldn't have been, that couldn't, I wasn't an alcoholic. That could have happened to anybody. And it never happened all the times that I really was drinking. So, I went through, you know, I kind of wished that a doctor would tell me your liver is going. I wished that that I had gotten some type of, you know, they never even told me to go to AA. They never told me to go to AA when I, that was 11 years ago. So I didn't. I was very, very afraid of AA. And about 5 years ago, I was had been more and more drinking, more and more miserable, more and more isolation, and I still hadn't started having the shakes, still didn't think I was an alcoholic. I guess I thought I was, but I didn't, certainly wasn't going to admit it. A friend of mine's husband almost died of pancreatitis, and that started scaring me, but I, that's not going to happen to me. And I was miserable. And I knew a friend had quit drinking. Ironically enough, he's also on the board here at Austin Recovery. And I knew he had quit drinking 5 years ago, and I ran into him, coincidentally. And I'd started just really, I mean, I can't say enough. I think about how miserable I felt and just that lonely, sick despair. I wish I could just let you see that for just a second and then let you see for an hour how I am now, because they're so drastically different. But I went, I ran into him in a building, and we exchanged cards, and I, in the middle of the day, and I'd been drinking, I went to his office and I said, hey, how did you stop? How did you stop? And he said, well, I went through this outpatient program, IOP, an intensive outpatient program. I said, what's their number? I called them that afternoon, and I was there that night. Again, I was going. They said, what's your insurance? I said, no, I'm paying you. And they said, you know, during all the intake, they asked me if I knew anybody that was sober. And I said, well, like right now, at this moment, because it's 4 p.m. I think somebody's sober of my friends, but no, I don't know anybody that's in AA. And that's also kind of an irony. If you look at my phone right now, the last 15 messages are, you know, people that are in the program. My dear friends are people that are in the program. I've also run into other people that are in the program. But I went to this fellow's office and I said, help me, you know, help me. How do I do this? And when he told me the outpatient program, I didn't know what that was, but I said, okay, I'll do it. I signed up, I paid them, and I said, okay, y'all fix me. Fix me. And it was a 3-month program. But for me, it lasted a little bit longer because of my work schedule, which was good because I stayed sober a little bit longer. And I never would say, I'm an alcoholic. I would say, hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm a drunk. Hi, I'm Sarah, and I like my Chardonnay. And we would do a check-in and say, have you been to a meeting? Do you have a sponsor? And I would say, I'm not going to a meeting. I'm not getting a sponsor. I was very, but y'all fix me. Y'all fix me. I'm paying you. You fix me. And I did feel better. And I felt better. We were talking earlier. I lost weight. Felt great. And I will say that was an incentive there. You know, my vanity, you know, one of my defects of character, that was an incentive to get me to staying not drinking. And I still didn't understand it. I so didn't understand it. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about drugs. I learned a lot about PTSD. I learned a lot in that five-month program. They did drug test us, but I wasn't worried about it because I really wasn't drinking. I could do this. And I really didn't understand it. And I just had removed the alcohol temporarily. And I had a job offer at the time, and it was the job of my lifetime, next step, Southwest region, move to Phoenix. And I thought, well, I really can't move to Phoenix, but I can add Phoenix. So I got an apartment out there and kept my place here. I was going back and forth a lot. Airports, airplanes, hotels are really big, really, really big. You know, places of where I used to drink. And I remember telling the counselor, because the program was wrapping up, and I said, I'm moving to Phoenix. And she was like, oh, do you think that's a good idea so early in sobriety? And I was like, yeah, it's a great idea. God gave me this great gift of this job, and it's because I'm sober. Everything's going to be just fine. The job started in August, and I think I started drinking in August. They actually had a party for me, a dinner, at welcoming me to the company, and they were having cocktails, and I said no thank you to the cocktails, which I thought was good. I never drank cocktails, really. I was a wine person anyways. So I started drinking the wine, and I thought I would be fine, and the next day I was fine, and then the next day I was fine drinking more wine, and it just continued and continued to the point where I was incredibly miserable. I came back to Austin and went and saw my doctor that I've seen for 30 years, and she said, something's not right with you. Something's not right. She said, maybe you need an antidepressant. I said, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. So I started taking this antidepressant, and then I was still drinking, and then I started having the shakes if I wasn't drinking. I was like, oh, it must be those antidepressants. And I still remember texting one of my friends that had said he was on that same antidepressant saying, do you shake? I remember him going, no, I don't shake. What do you mean? What are you talking about? And I was like, oh, okay. And telling my girlfriends in Phoenix when we were hiking, I couldn't even walk down this simple hike. I couldn't even, it wasn't even steps, it was just a slight incline, and I couldn't walk. I was shaking so badly. And I wound up not coming home for Christmas, and then my family got scared. And my sister, my oldest sister, is a rocket scientist. She, of my siblings, is the only one that doesn't have addiction, although she is pretty addicted to Diet Coke, and she does. She's a rocket scientist. She literally is a PhD in physics. And she was trying to make me think, you know, okay, this happens, you do this. She got this big piece of butcher paper out saying, okay, you start thinking about drinking, you do this, not this. And I was like, it just doesn't work like that. And I remember trying to tell her about the progressiveness of the disease while I was experiencing it. I was experiencing it so drastically, I didn't understand it. And I kept saying, oh, it's a progressive disease. I didn't know what the heck that meant, but I was explaining that to her. And she said to me, you know, Sarah, I really would rather you be an alcoholic than just a drunk, because an alcoholic has no choice. And that just, I remember, I was driving when she said it, and I said, okay, I'll sign up. So I went ahead, and at the time I was like, I can't go into treatment. I'll go to AA meetings. And then my therapist and my sister were both like, remember, you're really, really anti-AA. How do you think that's going to work? And then I was like, well, I'll do that IOP again. What? It didn't work the last time. So finally, when my sister said that, I said, okay, I'll go for 28 days. Ugh, my job, they can't do without me. They can't do without me. Okay, fast forward a couple months, I quit the job. They completely could do without me. But the other thing, when I went that was the first treatment. So that was January 3 years ago. And I went for 28 days, and I was the happiest person going to treatment. Because I sobered up for 4 or 5 days. My sister was there. I was going to go, and they were going to fix me again. I was all ready. They were going to fix me. And I learned a lot. And I also remember still not being AA. I was like, oh, I'm not sure about that. I don't want to do 12-step. And then I remembered seeing 12 steps on the wall at the place where I went. And it was a really, really lovely place. It was a house and these beautiful scenery. And I learned a lot. And there's a fellow that used to come and share his story. And he's in my phone. His name is Mike Future, because I remembered listening to him, and I said, I want what he has. I want that to be in my future. I didn't know what it was. And then I went to AA meetings, and that was the first time that I was like, oh, wait a minute, what's wrong with these people? They're talking about death, and they're talking about losing jobs, and they're talking about divorce, but they all seem really, really happy. And I thought, I want that. I still didn't get it. And I'll also say, I'm standing here today knowing that I don't get it. I know what I know, but there's a whole lot I don't know. I just keep doing what I'm told and relying on a power greater than myself. And I also remember, I would look at the 12 steps, and that first, sitting in the living room at this gorgeous place and seeing those 12 steps, I was like, okay, we need to do these 12 steps. Well, I just did them about 3 times right now. What's the point? You know, I was like, of course my life is unmanageable. I'm in a rehab, for goodness sakes. I have a problem. Yes, I know. And that was kind of the beginning. And also thinking that 28 days was going to fix 35 years of drinking. Now, granted, I wasn't drinking every day for 35 years, but that last 10 years I was making up for lost time. And to think that 28 days would fix that. And I did get out, and I did have a sponsor, and I did plan to go to meetings, but I still did not know. And I drank, I mean, not the moment I got out, but that night. And again, it was like I got a little bottle of wine. And, you know, then a couple months later, I just was back to my miserable, 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 worse than miserable, hopeless. I didn't want to take my life, but I didn't want to wake up in the morning. And I think I hear that a lot, too, that's a very common feeling. I decided to move back to Austin. My mom, we had a health scare with my mom. And she was 88 at the time. So it turned out to be a false scare, but I decided I should be here anyways, and I needed to get here to take care of me. And so I started going to AA meetings. I still didn't completely get it. And I was, you know, had a really good month or two, and then I was trying to live with, I didn't move back into my condo because I thought I needed people around, but there was a time where I was living with my 90-year-old mom, 89-year-old dad, and my mom's a hoarder, and guess what? They don't drink, but she hoards alcohol. And so I was like, oh, she's not going to notice this. She likes the bottles, that's what she says. But then, you know, so she's not going to notice this. So I started drinking again, and it was miserable, miserable, miserable. And I say that, and I don't like to go on about the drinking part of it, but I couldn't go a minute without drinking. It was constant drinking. And by this time, I wasn't working. By this time, some of my friends still spoke to me, but then I had an incident, and I'm not going to go into the details too much, but it was, I put myself in a really bad situation and was because of my drinking, was sexually molested. And I was so just beyond my bottom. And it was 8 o'clock in the morning, and that had happened the night before, and I was sitting in a parking lot of a convenience store drinking, and I knew that I needed to do something. And I called an Uber. I mean, I had an Uber come. And this Uber, I don't remember a whole lot of this, but some of it I pieced it together. The Uber driver, his name was Bo, and he drove a white truck, and it was very new. And I got in, and I said, "Would you pray with me? Will you pray with me?" And he said, "Yes." And he drove me out of the parking lot into another parking lot and called EMS. And that was, I mean, huge, because I could have driven my car, I could have died, I could have been arrested, all the things that could have, but him driving me out of the parking lot so I wasn't by my car, and then I was taken to a hospital. And at that point, they knew how miserable I was. Well, I will say, I did try another treatment center before this happened. I'm sorry, my flashbacks. I went to La Hacienda for 2 weeks, and another beautiful, beautiful place, another very, I feel very like this place, very spiritual, very connected. And I will say, like, I believed in God growing up, but then I became a Christian in my late 20s, to where I really thought I was walking with God. And that 2 years where I didn't drink, and I felt more connected to God. And now I don't know what God is, but God is there for me. I go to church sometimes. I pray every day. So all of these things that were happening to me, at La Hacienda, again, I wasn't able to stay there very long because of my insurance said I was too well, but I was on this hilltop, and it was the first time that I heard the third step really what it was, and that this is a program about my life, not a program just about alcohol, and that alcohol is but a symptom. I had friends saying to me, "I don't think your problem is alcohol." Friends that aren't in the program, they just said, "Something else is not right with you." And I remember standing on that hilltop and thinking, "I've got to turn my life over." And no matter whatever it is, my insecurities, whatever it is, it's going to be okay. And that's, you know, I feel like there's all these things that started the process, and it was my really trusting. And when I hit that really, really bottom, the EMS, again, I don't know how I was not arrested. I don't know how I wound up in a psych ward rather than a jail. And the psych ward was one of those things where I felt this intense human love, that we're all in this world together, and whatever we're dealing with, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever it may be, we're all here to help each other. And I remember being, really just lost. What am I going to do? And my sister, again, rocket scientist sister, she was going to come see me, and I said, "Will you bring me my big book?" And I had gotten on the cot, and it was one of those where I said, "I don't know God. I don't know anything. I don't know anything. I'm a 51-year-old woman. I do not know anything. And I will do anything. I will do whatever you need me to do. I just need it to be really, really clear." And my sister brought me my big book, and she said, and I had looked in the big book, and one of my friends that that I met at La Hacienda, she had written her phone number in there, and I knew she was living in a sober house. And I thought, well, maybe I could go live in that sober house, because I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought, I'm going to die. I'm going to be miserable. I'm going to die. And I was really at, I had no place to go. And I opened the phone, called her, and she said, this is going great. I love living here at this sober house. And she gave me the name of the sober house manager. I called her. I called the sober house, the overseeing manager, and asked him, could I come live in this house? The rules of the house, you had to be sober for 30 days. I'd been sober for 48 hours. And somehow he said, okay. And I've asked him since then, why did you, because I didn't even realize the rules. And he said, I have no idea. He said, I have no idea. Okay, I think that was a God thing for me. I had to, people ask me, what did you do? I mean, what didn't I do? I lived in a sober house. I surrounded myself with people that were trying to get sober. I had a sponsor. I started working the steps. I met with my sponsor for the first year and a half every day. The job that was so important, I had quit that one in Phoenix, and I didn't work for a year. And I did, therapy. I did yoga. I did just anything and everything. I started trying to give back as much as I could. I came out here. I was sharing earlier with one of the moms that I came out here probably a few weeks sober, but because I was with the sober house, I could come in for a big book meeting. And I didn't know enough about the big book. And they were like, it's okay, you'll learn. And I got to hold a baby. I got to hold a baby for the meeting. And that was just joyful, and being out here in this beautiful place. So, I think, just like more will be revealed. It tells us that in the big book. And I think I kept looking for these God shots or these God moments, but they were happening all around me all the time. The fact that after that, I don't know when the desire to have a drink went away, but I absolutely have no desire whatsoever. I mean, like, I can see alcohol and it sort of makes my stomach turn. I might like the idea of something like fancy, but I can play the tape forward. I know if I take that first drink that I'm going to be passed out, or I'm going to be drinking more. I'm going to do stupid things. I'm going to feel scared of everything. And I think about, what are the things that sobriety has brought me? This incredible sense of peace. And this program has taught me, if I ever start feeling uneasy about something, that I have tools, I have people, I have my God that I can turn to. And just time and time again, things just coincidentally fall into place. I have a couple of things that, when I first started working again, that was also a blessing. Work started coming when I could handle it. Relationships started coming when I can handle them. More trials started happening when I could handle them. And, God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. And I, being able to give back is huge for me. Because I remembered, I did start taking meetings to another treatment center in town. The same house manager that let me in before he really should have, had said, I want you to see the lights go on. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, I want you to see, you'll see it. When the lights go on, it's a difference. And I see it. I love running into people that I met at a detox center or a treatment center. I love seeing that people are, their lights have come on. I had a young woman, and I got to spend the day with her this morning and yesterday. She's a doctor down in Galveston, and I met her at a treatment center a little more than 2 years ago, and she was sitting across the table from me, and we were talking about the steps and turning your will and your life over to God as you understand Him. And she looked at me and she said, am I effed on this deal? Because I don't believe in God. And I said, no. And no, you just have to believe that you're not God. And you have to trust that something else is there. As I said, I got to share, spend the day with her yesterday. It was her birthday, her belly button birthday. But she picked up a two-year chip in December. And she shared in the meeting yesterday, and I know we're not supposed to share what, but her shares are about God, and her shares are about this life that she has. She also shared with me that she's pregnant. And I just, that wouldn't be possible if I wasn't sober. That wouldn't be possible. I wouldn't be able to be living life. I wouldn't have been able to spend time in the hospital with my dad 2 weeks ago, because if I were drunk, I wouldn't have been able to support my mom during that. One of my first few months in sobriety, or 6 months in sobriety, I had a business situation where somebody was talking about me, and I didn't realize, they didn't realize they were talking about me, but they were talking about this woman that this other gentleman had wanted to take over his business, but she had a substance abuse problem, so, and I knew he was talking about me. He didn't realize it. And I started shaking, and I was angry that this other person was talking about me, and I was scared. I was fearful of what do people think of me. And I was sitting in the parking lot on the phone of a Randall's grocery store, and I, you know, any other time I would have beelined it in there to the wine and said, forget this, I'm out of here. But I, after I hung up with him, I was just shaking and I was scared, and I thought, what am I going to do? I thought, I'm going to call my sponsor. Oh, my sponsor was going to be out of town, and I was like, I can't call my sponsor. Okay, I'll call my sister. Okay, my sister would have said, let's go beat up that guy, because she just wanted to protect me. And I thought, no, you know what? I can talk to my God about this. And I sat there and I prayed, and I felt at peace. And I all of a sudden said, well, really, what the guy was talking about was true. I am an alcoholic. It's not his fault. He wasn't being malicious. He wasn't saying my name. He was talking about something that was happening to him. That's what this program allows me to do, to be able to see my part in this, and also to see that it's not always about me. And then the next morning, I called the guy back that was talking about this, and I said, hey, I just wanted you to know that that was me. I'm the alcoholic that he was referring to. And he said, no, you're not an alcoholic. I said, yep, and I'm in recovery, and I, you know, it's a blessing. It's a blessing, because otherwise I'd just be a drunk out there. And he said, okay, well, I've got this other project I want you to work on. I mean, it didn't faze him. It didn't faze him. And he's still a client to this day. So, you know, there have been a number of times where fear has come in, and I just turn it over. As I said, I am working right now, but I wrapped up two major projects at the end of the year. One, it wrapped up because the firm that I was working for got bought. The other wrapped up because I decided I was going to walk away from this guy that I didn't feel comfortable. He was drinking way too much. I didn't think his integrity was there. He wasn't paying me all the time, you know. So I made the decision, I'm going to turn this over to God, and I walked away. And I know it's going to be fine. And relationships, friendships, I'm constantly turning things over to God and doing what the program tells me, going and helping other people, praying when I've done something wrong. It's so freeing when you do something wrong to just, you're supposed to tell somebody you're sorry. And I think this program should have been taught in kindergarten, if you think about it. You know, play nice with others. You're not the boss. And, you know, when you've done something wrong, tell somebody. I mean, it's kind of basic, good stuff. As I said when I started, that I've never been so content and never been so okay. And I just also have this joy to know that it's just going to keep getting better, because if I'm just scratching the surface, I'm a little more than 2.5 years into this. So, and I, you know, as I said, I got sober at 51. I remember thinking I wanted to get sober at 50 or before I was 50, when I started first thinking I had a problem. And I see young people, and I get so excited for them. And I can't really regret that I didn't get sober because at that age, because I know everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. And I am, you know, my life, my experiences are exactly the way they're supposed to be. So I thank you all for letting me come out here and share. It's great to be in a room of my friends. I always say that when I go to an AA meeting, even if you're in a, that it's like going to a foreign country and seeing a Texas Longhorns shirt. So, but thank you all very much.